So tell me about your journey. Not only have you got a unique journey in business, you are also a stand-up comedian. So give us an opening notes on your journey in business, and then I'm really going to dig into your comedy career as well before we go any further.
Oh, sure, yeah. So it's quite weird. I have quite a mashed up life. So basically, my career has been in the world and continues to be in the world of financial services and technology. So I've been on this fast track journey where I was head of e-commerce during the dot-com boom. I worked for an international brokerage firm. I was global head of communications for the technology business of the New York Stock Exchange. So intergalactic gigs like that. And then I decided to kind of basically, when I was about 35, decide actually, if I don't do stand-up comedy now, I'll always regret it. And that was about 14 years ago. So completely out of the blue, I decided to book a show at Edinburgh, and I took a show to Edinburgh. I thought, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to go big. It's got to matter. And it's going to make me really focus on doing it well. So I aimed for Edinburgh, went to took a show to Edinburgh, and then basically realized it wasn't great, in truth. It wasn't amazing. I learned an enormous amount about how to sell, also how to produce, how to write, how to bring in a director.
Yes, it is. It's the marketplace for comedy, isn't it?
It is. And you'll know, 40,000 performers, 8,500 shows, 3 weeks, and you have to get your crowd in. So you know, learn an enormous amount about kind of doing business as well as putting on a show. So I came back and I had a phone call actually from an ex-employer. Said, "Look, we're going to launch this brand new business. Would you like to do some freelance work?" And I thought, "Great, I can do some comedy on the side. I can still pay my bills." And then actually, it was such a high-profile piece of work that the phone just kept ringing. And as we sit here, 14 years later, 13, 14 years later, the phone hasn't stopped. All our work comes in by word of mouth. But the important thing was that actually, as that business began to build out, I kind of put the comedy aside a little bit because actually people were telling me two things, which I think are really kind of relevant to the interview. One of them is you have to choose, right? You have to be a businesswoman or a comedian. You can't be both. And I was like, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think, we need so much energy. Well, take conferences for a starting point, but also in terms of our messaging, in our marketing, how we tell stories, how we basically kind of build businesses. It has to have some imagination. So it can't be such a bad thing, surely, that if I'm advising companies, that actually to keep that creative side of my life going really matters.
Yes, and I think even if you haven't gigged in the last 14 years, then if you've taken a show to the Edinburgh Festival, by my reckoning, as a pro comic of over 15 years and an interviewer of over 300 of the best comedians in the world, you are one of us. You're blooded. And once you're in the gang, you're never out of the.
Right, and so I've worked on the show. I've taken it to other festivals. It's sold out. I've done the Comedy Store. I've done the big events, the big gigs, and kind of. And it's really funny though, because you do in your head go, "Am I a businesswoman or am I a comedian?" And actually, I am both.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's talk about your business then. You set up at the collapse of Lehman's, one of your businesses. So you were in an incredible, I mean, disruptive change, such as the pandemic period we're currently currently challenged by. That is kind of second nature to you, is it? Those kind of big events that turn everything upside down.
Yeah, so imagine there are two family interventions taking place pretty much in parallel. One was when I said to my family, "I'm going to give up my global job and become a stand-up comedian." And they went, "You're going to do what now?" And then the second was when we went into the biggest financial crisis, and I said, "I'm going to incorporate a business and set up a company." And they were like, is this really a good time to do this?" But actually, I'm a big believer in opportunity. And so actually, when I set up my business, I realized a couple of things. One was I really wanted to work with the innovators in the industry. So people who are using technology. We call it the field of fintech, financial services and technology, right? So I wanted to work with people who are using technology to reimagine and redesign and address some of the challenges that exist in the industry today. A lot of that's driven by regulation. A lot of it's driven by you and me wanting to have digital content on our smartphones day by day. We want to know where our bank accounts are. We want to know where our investments are. We want to know where our mortgage is. This is all the world of fintech. Now, what I also knew was that those kind of businesses, when they're in the early stage, are really price sensitive, right? They don't have much budget because part of the reason for building their business is they have to go through a journey of fundraising. So when they're really small and doing very exciting things, which is when they need marketing and communications and business development help, they don't have much money. So I basically kind of decided to opt for a completely different business model from the traditional agencies and consultancies out there, because I knew that there was an opportunity to be able to provide an even better offering.
Okay, so just explain that to me again in as close to layperson terms as you can, because I'm with you for most of that. Your unique angle in that marketplace was what precisely? It was what was the difference in what you were offering?
So a couple of things. One of them is that quite often you'll have a marketing agency or a PR agency or a business development agency. And what we do is we basically work with the entrepreneurs thinking about how do you build your profile in the industry in order to attract sales and customers and also to grow your business. So your brand and your profile and your media relations profile and what you do on social media and what you do at conferences really matters. So what we do is we do it all. We basically think about the strategy, we think about the message, and then we think about where you should be promoting yourselves in order to attract business and support sales. So this is all about growth. It's all about helping fintech firms and entrepreneurs and innovators to grow. But at the other end, we also work with some huge organizations, all of whom are trying to innovate, but it's harder. You know, if you're a massive bank or a financial institution, you might have 300,000 employees around the world. You've probably got technology that it's called legacy technology. So it's been in there for a while. Mm-hmm. It probably works in silos. How do you bring it all together? So you have to be able to innovate in a very different way, but by also interacting with these early stage companies. So we're kind of the piece in the middle in many ways.
And how much is confidence a part of that? Because when we're talking about big moments of disruptive change, I know, we both know from our work in stand-up comedy, that having the confidence to look as if you know what you're doing can sometimes be 90% of the battle.
Well, it is very true. In fact, we do a lot of confidence coaching, communications coaching, because what we find is we work with amazing entrepreneurs who have incredible technology that's been built, you know, through code that is incredibly compelling. But can they tell that story? And with confidence, you know, you've hit the nail on the head, really. So which is be able to go out and just say, actually, this is the answer. It's the answer today. And it also, we are going to be successful in the future. Come on this journey with us, you know, see the difference this can make. But actually what's fascinating is those who don't talk about themselves so much, but more talk about the problem that they're solving, are the ones that are proven to do better.
Okay, ones that don't talk about themselves but talk about the problem. Yes, that makes a lot of sense, because actually what people need is something that solves their problem, and that's far more important to them than someone who can come through. It's not just about confidence, is it? It's not just about saying I'm a leader, follow me. It's about leadership in the sense of what you can offer rather than what you can achieve for yourself.
That's right. And I think there are some interesting sort of things to take from that. So one is right now, those businesses that are trying to sell at a time of crisis, there is a market reaction. There's a bit of a kind of sentiment shift against them, just going, hang on a minute, we're all in this together, right? We're all facing horrific times and you're trying to flog me a product. That is not...
This is an incredible moment. If you look at what BrewDog have done with producing hand sanitizer, that's BrewDog branded hand sanitizer, suddenly they've earned major good guy points. And at the same time, we can all point to businesses, and I won't name any, who have, I think, made enormous catastrophic errors by simply seeking to profiteer.
Exactly. And so the whole point about, you know, is you come out with all your features and benefits and tell me why your technology is amazing and that sort of thing. You know, frankly, who cares? What I care about is what you can do for me. And what keeps me awake at night is, if I'm a financial institution or whoever it is, whatever that customer is, business resilience. And I know you talk about that an enormous amount in terms of not only sort of leadership resilience, but also organizational resilience as well. So business resilience at a time of chaos, helping me manage my teams and to be able to communicate them with more effectively so we continue to do business really well. Think ahead, and whatever that is, you know, your customer's always lying awake at night thinking about some key things. The real essence of the businesses that will do well are the ones that can chime with what their customers are really thinking about at the moment.
Yes, well, that's a good point. We'll come back to that. Let's talk about teams. Let's talk about inspiring and motivating teams. Now, I don't work in teams myself. I'm a solo performer. The vast majority of my experience is about how to inspire and motivate myself. And that's what I try to pass on from how some of the greatest comedians can get over those humps. I mean, something that always alarms people is the fact that even the most famous people you can think of feel imposter syndrome. And even in the most kind of in extreme categories, I remember talking to the comedian Russell Howard and about how you feel when you come off stage at Wembley Arena. And he was saying, you don't run around high-fiving everyone. You come off and go, was that okay?
Yeah.
Was that okay? You know? So no matter what you're broadcasting in terms of your confidence, there is that internal battle. So let's talk for a moment about inspiring and motivating that confidence within teams.
Sure. So when I set up my company, and again, I was thinking about, you know, how to be very price sensitive for these early stage fintech entrepreneurs, I decided to set up a completely virtual business model. So for 13, 14 years now, I've been running a business where we never had an office. Technology is a great enabler. And and to be able to find really talented people who are happy working at home. And I think that's probably the essence of what we need to really think about at the moment, which is, are people happy where they are? Now, there are a number of things we have to focus on. One of them, of course, is, and I've always believed this, which is look after your teams and they will look after your customers. And I know that Richard Branson's a big believer in this. And this model of kind of, some people call it servant leadership. My job is to make sure my teams have everything that they need in order to look after our customers. And if they don't, then we need to make some adjustments. That's one of the big things. So right now, well, actually, let's go back to when I set it up, was do they have the right technology? Do they have the right sort of personal setup? Do they have the right sort of characteristics to be good working at home? One of the fascinating things, people go, I'd love to work at home. That'd be amazing. So it doesn't suit everybody. It doesn't suit everyone. And I think one of the things we have to think about now is, you know, those who were very happy working from home before, for example, you know, it's no coincidence a large proportion of my team are working mothers. They take their children to school in the morning, as indeed do their partners if they have them. Some of them are single mothers and are very happy because then they could do great work, get paid well for it, have a great sense of achievement. They're incredibly focused and also can be there for their families. Now, of course, that world for them has shifted. Their families are around all the time. They're having to homeschool, home educate. So are they doing all right? That's my number one priority at the moment. How are they functioning? And then the other side is they have some people who may well work alone. You know, if you're in your 20s and you live in a studio flat and you're on your own, it might be your first property, although it's interesting now how many people would be able to buy a property. Another conversation for another day.
Yeah,
but, you know, or you might be in a crazy home share, or you could be wherever that is, and you could feel lonely, isolated. It's not for everybody, and it's particularly at the moment. We have to really think about what the teams need. So for me, regular communication. Communicate more than you've ever communicated before. Check in with your teams more than you've ever checked in before. And culture is everything. So one of the things I'm probably most proud of is that despite the fact that people are scattered all over the UK, is that actually in clients' teams and also as clusters within our organization, people do check in with each other. They're really good at just going, how you doing? How you feeling? Are we cross? Are we angry? Because what we used to do is we'd kind of always get everybody together. We'd have drinks regularly. We'd have offsites, all that stuff. But now we're having to do that digitally. And I think the big thing that everybody's doing at the moment is they're just checking in with each other, just going, how are we doing?
That must be very satisfying to be cultivating that culture whereby people are happy to do their on their own back, so that there's a kind of parallel. You need to kind of be rigorous about instilling that culture and making sure that you transmit that message to your staff members that this is the kind of organisation in which we are going to care about each other, not simply by the sake of sending a memo round, but actually actively contacting one another.
Well, I think that's the point, isn't it? Because when we look at, you know, corporate culture language, we tend to go, oh, we're all about honesty and integrity and, you know, and you'll see, I mean, you've done corporate work, right? You'll have seen these kind of expressions being chucked around, you know, left, right and centre.
Yes.
The question is, how do you embody them? And that's a beautiful example, exactly as you've just framed it, which is, you know, when people actually do actively check in with each other and going, just checking in, you're okay, how's things going, or how's your homeschooling? Okay. Yes. You know, how's the matto work going?
Absolutely. It is the difference. It's got to be the difference between. I was doing some interviewing wealth managers at a graduate recruitment event, and I would say to them, it was to inspire, to kind of try and give an insight into the bank. It's a really good initiative. But there would be 100 kids all sort of desperately concerned about their careers and what was going to happen, all making notes of everything we said. And I would say, I did this for a few years, and every time we would get to this moment where I would say to one of the bank employees, and what is it you're looking for? And they would turn to all these kids and say, we need people who've got a personality. And all of them would bend down and scribble in their notes, they need people who have a personality. So you really need to grab that immediately from the word go. You need to stop and go, look at what you've just done. It's not a note to be scribbled down. It's a conversation to have as we look into each other's eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, what you get back from that is all comes down to the caliber of the team. Remember why you've hired these people. Right, the reason why I've hired, taken on the, I mean, everybody's, it's a freelance model. So the reason why, you know, I'm working with these people, these consultants, is because of what I fundamentally believed, which is some of those characteristics. You know, they're proactive, they're self-disciplined, they're very focused on delivery, all those sort of things. I think what's interesting now is the conversation I'm having with them, to your point about actually having a conversation, is actually saying to people, how will I know if you're not doing well? Because actually what's very good, and I completely respect that, which is you may not want to talk to me if you're having a bad day. You may not want to talk to me if you're feeling more anxious than you naturally would be. And that's fine. Yes. And you should be feeling these things, by the way. That is a very, very human. It shows that you're a human being. My big question to you is, how will I know when you're not doing so well?
That's a fantastic question.
And if we're not paying attention to that, then actually the journey between functioning and struggling is incredibly short. So it is really, really important to pay attention to that.
Yes, being able to, and just, I mean, I'm really impressed. I think that's a really good question. I feel like I could use that in my personal relationships as well. Because at a time when we do need to look after one another, it's so important to recognise that you might take for granted in all of everybody's stress that even people close to you, you know, there's a natural tendency to assume that if no one says anything, they're fine. And actually remembering that and taking that into a corporate culture as well is so important.
And you know, we are also, the other thing that's really important to focus on is, do you understand, without sending everybody off on a kind of, you know, a very expensive personality test exercise, but do you understand the natural personality types of your team? And do you understand how they change in certain circumstances?
And the dynamic, the interplay between different personality types when people are working together.
Exactly. So you have some people who are natural, you know, go-getters in a time of crisis. They will wake up going, this is an opportunity. We're going to go for it. We're going to change our mindset. Let's engage with everybody. And you'll get some people who are, will probably take more time to process, will probably become a little bit more introverted. With that can potentially come anxiety, but anxiety can come across the spectrum and it does reveal itself in different ways. And it's really important that right now that you just to have a natural understanding. If you don't, by the way, really pay attention to it. And then also understand how people are changing over time and over the working week. Actually, the working day, the working week. So where people start on a Monday and where they end up on a Friday can be two very, very different states of mind and also places to be.
So if we're talking about the mental health of our employees, before we move on to some sort of technical tips and tricks and best technology to use, I just wanted to share with you something from an interview that I did with the comedian Sarah Millican, who said one of the most pithy and consequently viral things within comedy, which is that she has this thing she calls Millican's Law, which is that no matter how well or badly your show goes, the next morning you are not allowed to either celebrate your own great deeds or be depressed about your performance after 11 a.m. So it's a really good way to keep you level.
It is. And I think that's the particularly now, it's a really good model to apply, because particularly now where, you know, every phone call we have the client reveals another piece of information. Now, sometimes that's very positive, and sometimes that's it can be less positive. I wouldn't say negative, but people are obviously thinking about budgets. They're thinking about what they're going to do. They're thinking about their plans, etc. And there's a risk. There's a real risk that we can get into these sort of vortexes of either unnecessary excitement,
yeah,
or indeed, you know, kind of deep-seated concern about what this means. What this means for us, yes, as an organisation, what it means for me as a human being, what it means for my teams, etc. And I think that's a very levelling thing to do. I think one of the things we have to do now as leaders, more than ever before, is be cool, be calm, be collected, and to be level-headed. And I think that is just such a... Oh, we should all use that.
So let's talk about some of the best tech for remote working. And I mean, I know people are using lots of organisational tools. We're talking on Zoom at the mm-hmm. moment. People are using Slack and Skype. What are your most useful apps or other pieces of software?
So we run everything on Google Docs and Google Drive. So that makes life very easy. And so we can access it from anywhere and know that it's safe. That's the big thing about security. It's having it in the cloud where it's rock steady, it's secure, and it's very easy for people to collaborate around that. Zoom, exactly as you say, we're using that a lot. Google Hangouts. But also a big thing that we did last year was we moved all our timesheets, all our invoicing, all our accounting into the cloud. So it's fully automated end to end, partly because I travel a lot. I mean, I get invited to host conferences around the world, on stages, either as a speaker or indeed, you know, emceeing or running panels and debates, etc. So what's important for me is that actually, literally any time zone, day or night, I could be up there managing our finances as much as I'm managing the accounts, and I could be collaborating with the team on Google Docs and that sort of thing. So those are the big things. We mentioned Zoom, of course, there's Microsoft Teams, and then using instant messaging apps like Slack, for example.
And have you had any kind of horror stories of things of like that going wrong? Because I it took me a long time to learn to trust the cloud, I have to say. Even just, I mean, part of that may have been sentiment, very attached to the idea of writing jokes in a notebook.
Yes.
And it only takes losing it once to completely reconfigure your thinking on that.
No, that's right. No major disasters, really, other than we just found that as we grew, we needed to scale up. And as I began to travel, because about 30% of our business is non-UK, so we have clients in Middle East, North America, out into, you know, Asia as well. So it just meant that we needed to find smarter tools. And the cloud is a very effective way of doing it. I could be checking documents on my phone, on my iPad, on my laptop, from pretty much anywhere. And again, for me, it's about the security. That's a really big feature, and to be able to work together on stuff.
And just while we're on tech, let's look at webinars, online conferences, podcasts and so on. How are they used for the event industry?
Well, I think we're at a really, really interesting stage because, how do I put this? We've all sat in conference auditoriums, however big or small, watching incredibly talented and insightful leaders and speakers on incredibly dry panels, talking about incredibly dry topics, and frankly found it very hard to sing along and be naturally distracted. You know, it's amazing how quickly you get into your email when a panel doesn't work very well. My biggest concern at the moment is that actually we're going to find a lot of people taking that format and then just sticking it onto a webinar. And making it online. And there's a real risk there because it's a numbers game, as well we know. One is, first of all, how many people are going to register to attend? How many people actually turn up? And how long do they stay for? So I think people have to really reimagine what online content feels like. Now, when you think about it, there are principles of radio. And actually, it's wonderful. I do quite a bit of radio. I'm a guest on the Dominic King show on BBC Radio Kent, you know, every 4 or 5 weeks. So it's fascinating sitting in the studio and thinking about how do you actually curate a show. And that those principles apply very, very well to the times we're in right now. Also thinking about production quality, thinking about the mix of content, both in terms of short form, really you know, easy to digest, snackable content, they call it, really short form stuff, yeah. But then also, yeah, into bigger debate and insight and keynotes. But be able to do that in a way that actually within the content itself, you've got great speakers who know how to command attention over time, mm-hmm. but also understand that you need to be mixing up your formats. So if I talk to you for 45 minutes, you know, sometimes it's going to be an exposition of my amazing knowledge on a topic, but then I'm going to want to interact and I'm going to have to really properly interact with listeners and viewers and people who tuned in. And to then to give some short form stuff that kind of poses some questions, mixes it up. So the energies are very different as well. So I think it's exciting. Actually, I'm very excited. I think we're certainly being approached a lot to work with conferences, thinking about how do we do stuff a bit differently.
Yes. One of the most exciting things that's happening at the moment in the comedy industry, now that everyone has suddenly got an incredibly empty live diary, is an incredible amount of energy and sort of innovation being used at trying to get. I've spent most of this week on a variety of conference calls with people in Texas trying to work out how to push Zoom through Twitch so that I can run a live show to 20 faces that I can see on a Zoom app in gallery view, but also so that I can perform as a comic and see people's reactions so that I'm not just kind of shouting into the void, and yet take that entire screen and push it through Twitch or YouTube Live so that other people can join that gig from afar.
Yeah.
So it's about trying to take thing A and attach it to slot three and go, right, okay, how are these things, how can they work together? And of course, from the perspective of a performer, it's all about trying to maintain that human contact that lets it be an actual real live event. So one of the things that we're able to do is we don't have the luxury of being boring, because if we're boring, people leave. Now, that's exactly as you say, people don't start looking at their emails at a conference, people simply disappear. So we have there's a tremendous urgency at the moment of establishing what those new forms are. And again, I think that hunger to learn what's next, what's going to be the next exciting thing that drags everyone along with it.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
And again, going back to comedy principles, you're only as good as your last gig. So it
really is that true of the rest of the world as well? How
it
disappointing.
Really matters. Yeah. No, take some heart in that. Take some heart in that. That it's exactly the same, it's and so be able to kind of rethink some of that things. I mean, for example, when I did a speech, actually, was it last week? It's amazing how time flies. Last week to an organisation, and it was a lunch and learn session. So they did it all over Zoom. They had probably about 80 people tuning in on Zoom from all over the world. And they were sending me live questions over the chat box. So kind of the way we did it was I kind of spoke for a bit, I took some questions, we carried on, and it was incredibly interactive. And the feedback was really positive, which is very kind, obviously. It's the feedback you don't hear that I'm always most interested in. But the most important thing is actually, as I was flicking through Zoom and the panel, exactly as you said, the gallery of faces, was actually just trying to see, do people look as though they're really engaged? Because that's the other thing, is actually how do you know? How do you know? And the energies across the platforms change.
Yes, well, this is it. I mean, part of my business, a lot of it is to do with reading the room.
Mm-hmm.
You need to read yourself. Mm-hmm. You need to know how oneself is coming across. But also being able to sort of smell the room in a live environment, whether it's to 100 people or 20,000, it's about trying to develop and fine-tune those instincts, almost in the way that you would with a partner. One of the things I like to say is that if you ask your partner, are you all right, and they say yes, and you know they aren't. It's that kind of sixth sense that you need to employ when dealing with audiences. Let's talk briefly about how you manage that in a remote performance context, in a remote webinar.
Well, I've always said that there are great comedy skills to be used in business, and so actually we have a whole coaching program where I'm working with an award-winning stand-up comedian, Lara A. King, and we've created a whole program called Executive Shine, teaching people comedy skills. What we're now also doing is we do presentation skills for very, very senior executives, and we now do them over Zoom. So we're thinking about how do you hold eye contact, how do you manage the call, particularly if you're trying to sell and as well as present. How do you hold the call so that you can maintain interest over time? How do you recognise your space and also recognise your energy and keep that varied and engaging all over the duration of a call until Zoom throws you off because you don't have a corporate account? but all of those things, those principles apply, but actually the world and the dynamics, and that's why use of your face, use of your hands, and even use of pauses can have an enormous amount of impact in terms of just keeping the audience. Use every trick, you possibly can, yes. Now more than ever before. Whereas before you'd go, well, you know, I may not be a great speaker, but I've got an amazing PowerPoint slide. Now it's people that actually people find that even more distracting. They want to hear you tell yes. the story. It's all about, it's what you and I do best, right? It is storytelling and stand-up comedy techniques.
Let's look at some of the harder elements of your business. What kind of mistakes have you made along the way that you can share with us, or mistakes that you've overcome or managed to turn into a learning?
Well, I think the biggest thing I was talking about earlier was probably slightly taking for granted how people were doing. So we've had a couple of situations where people who I thought would thrive working remotely actually haven't.
Okay.
And that's what's kind of driven that comment I made earlier about the journey between functioning and not doing quite so well is remarkably short. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why I talk about, you know, really pay attention to personality types, how people are doing, check in with them, get other people to check in, get people to check in with each other. But also, again, at the risk of repeating the point, which was, how will I know if you're not doing well? And part of that's beholden on me to ask you. But I get, you know, it's exactly what you said, I'm fine.
So how can businesses right now, particularly the event industry, how can business utilise this period of enforced downtime in which we find ourselves?
You know, I was saying a little while ago about the importance of reimagining content. Well, I think there are a couple of other things. One is it's really important in this time that we don't lose the essence of curiosity. So in organisations, we, you know, good leaders spend time with their teams, encouraging them not only to do the job they have to do, but also to be curious about where we should be investing, where we should be researching, where we should be building new products, new insights, etc. So I think one of the things is don't forget that, because now is the time to be looking at the world at large, seeing what else we could be bringing to the events industry, other tips and techniques and technologies, exactly as you were saying, that could be brought from the world of comedy, the world of arts, the world of performance. You know, we're seeing virtual choirs, we're seeing virtual orchestras come through. So be really curious about how that stuff works. And then the other thing I think is just to remember that we operate in a global world. You know, as we sit here in the UK facing what we're facing, we're not alone. You know, this is an international global pandemic, but also there are international lessons to be learned. And I think that I've always believed, as an international businesswoman, that we need to be ensuring that we're definitely looking out beyond our borders and beyond our horizons to see what we can learn from there.
And let's wrap up by talking about the immediate and the long-term future of the industry. How can we make this as positive an experience as possible?
So as I was saying, you know, now is a time for reimagination, and that really, really matters. But one other thing that's really struck me, I have a podcast in the city talking about diversity and inclusion in financial services. It's called Diverse City Podcast. And in the city today, there are 5 generations working in financial services, more than ever before. And I think another point to make is that there will be those in the events industry who are very experienced. They have ridden out financial crises. They've gone through economic cycles before, and will have the leadership and the experience to guide events through this. But also, we must listen to the voices and the experiences of the younger talents in the industry who are using different technologies, who are consuming information in a very, very different way. And I think that's when you begin to capture the experience plus also the fresher view on the world, I think that could be really exciting.
I totally agree with you. I was talking to Barry Cryer for my Comedian to Comedian podcast. He's recently celebrated his 85th birthday after a 50-year plus career in comedy. And I was staggered by how quickly he rattled off a list of the names of the newer comedians that he's interested in at the moment, that he's excited by. And I think that really typifies the point you're making. Here's someone who is at the end of his career, an incredibly illustrious career, who nonetheless is still in the clubs watching the newer talent emerge and break through and come up with an incredible amount of innovation. So I couldn't agree with you more. So let's wrap up then. Julia, we've been talking about reimagining. What is your number one tip for anyone listening to this to embrace the reimagination of what their business does?
I think at this time, more than ever before, is it's important just to remember what's the objective, what's the purpose of any event. And it is basically to, in my mind, to bring insightful content delivered by inspirational and engaging speakers to an audience of people who are keen to learn. And however that format evolves, and however we reimagine the delivery of that, that is fundamentally the role. And there is a lot to say at the moment. There's an enormous amount to talk about.
I've been Stuart Goldsmith. Thank you very much to Julia Streets for Performing Artists.
Stuart, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation. Thank you.